I was listening to that offertory and was enjoying it. Daryl walks up and he goes, "You like that?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." I said, "I guess I'm a hillbilly." He said, "Well, you are from South Georgia." So evidently anybody in South Georgia is a hillbilly. Oh, Doug. Hey, Doug was getting down on that bass guitar, wasn't he? I mean, he was, what is it called, a run or something like that? Or a rip? It's a rip. Yeah, he was ripping on it. Well, tonight I want to preach out of chapter 18, and we're going to try to finish the chapter tonight. I began a couple of weeks ago in chapter 18, and we began with a man named Jonathan. We're going to close with Jonathan's younger sister. Her name is Michal. And we're going to have a few things to say about her in just a little bit. But last Sunday night, I mentioned some phrases that we have been coming across regularly in the last several verses. It was things like this: the Lord was with him. David behaved himself wisely. Saul was afraid of David. Those phrases are found many, many times here in the portion of Scripture which we have been in now for a couple of 3 weeks. If you think that Saul, who has been trying to kill David, has given up on that goal, you're mistaken. Before we delve into the passage tonight totally, I want us to just kind of think about the number of times that Saul, from chapter 18 through the beginning really of chapter 20, how many times he tries to kill David. And each time he tries to kill David and fails, he knows more assuredly in his heart that God's with him. Not only is God with him, but God is protecting him. If you want to count the number of times with me, I believe that it's 12 times that Saul tries to either personally kill him or have someone do the deed for him. If you want to look at the passages, if you're taking notes, and I certainly encourage you to do that, if you look at chapter 18 and verse 11, it says that Saul tried to kill him with a javelin twice. So that's the first two attempts. The third attempt is found in verse 13 of chapter 18. Saul was removing him from the palace. He was kicking him out of the household. And he made him a captain over 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. In other words, Saul was sending him to the various hot spots that the Philistines would attack at, hoping that David, in one of those hot spots, would be killed. So that's number three. In verse 17, we have the story that we're going to talk about this evening. You have Saul, and there is the oldest daughter of Saul. Her name is Merah. Now, in our English Bible, there's a B on it, but there is no B pronunciation in the Hebrew, and so it's Merah. And he says, "I will give her to you if you'll be valiant," or if you'll be strong for me, "and fight the Lord's battles." Isn't that nice? In other words, it's not really fighting for me. I mean, you're doing this for God. And so why is he doing that? Well, Saul said, "Let not mine hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him." And so that's the fourth attempt. The fifth attempt is found in verse 25 of the same chapter, and we will get to that in just a little bit. And so I'll save comment until we get there, but that's number five. Number six is found in chapter 19, verse 1, and Jonathan and his men are ordered by Saul to kill David. Jonathan refuses. So that's number six. Number seven is found in chapter 19 in verse 10. If you look at verse 19 and verse 10, you find another javelin, and he tries to kill him with a spear for the third time now. Then in chapter 19, verse 11, what you have is you've got messengers that come to David's house. Now, we'll get to this when we get into chapter 19, but basically the story is that David's wife, who he's going to get this evening, she protects him by letting him down a wall on the outside of the old city, and he gets away. Then she basically takes some type of clothing and maybe some type of animal skin and puts it in the bed where that it looks like David. And these people from Saul's headquarters, they come in basically and take their spears and they try to kill David while he's asleep, only to find out that it's just a dummy laying there. And so we'll get to that in chapter 19, and that is number 8. Number 9, 10, and 11 takes place in verses 18 to 21. You've got three groups of messengers. That name messenger is a little humorous for me. You've got three groups that come to try to get David at a place called Naioth. And each one of these groups, they're trying to deceive the people that are basically helping to hide David. And so you have 9, 10, and 11 there. And then the 12th one, Saul himself seeks to kill him again in chapter 20. Now there'll be some more attempts as he flees into what is called the Negev, down around a place called En Gedi. When you go to Israel, you will be able to go to En Gedi. And it's a place now that it's a national park, and they have all kind of wild animals that roam, and I mean, some of these things are beautiful. You blink your eyes and you don't see anything, and you blink again and look, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, they are camouflaged into the scenery there. And so David hides in those caves. And as we get to it a little bit later in our study of Samuel, you'll see that. But in these few verses from chapter 18 through 20, you'll find about 12 different instances where Saul is doing his dead level best to kill David. And so I want you to look with me at verse 17 tonight of chapter 18, and that's where we will begin. The Bible says, "And Saul said to David," now David, I'm guessing, is probably walking on his tiptoes by this time. He's already been three times, had his life attempted to be taken from him. And so he's probably kind of, you know, watching with the old, you know, Leah eye. And so Saul is saying, "Behold my daughter Merah, her will I give thee to wife. Only be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul said, let not mine hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him," be upon David. I want you to hold your finger there, and I want you to turn back one page. And I want you to look with me at chapter 17 and look at verse 25. You remember this is pre-Goliath. The men of Israel are talking, and they say, "Have you seen the man that has come up? Have you seen this 9.5-foot guy? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches." In other words, he's going to be a wealthy man, whoever kills this 9.5-foot guy. And then notice this, "and will give him his daughter." She's already been offered. The guy that kills the giant gets the girl. All right? "And make his father's house free," which means tax free, "in all of Israel." So in other words, David's father, Jesse, because his boy kills this giant, he don't have to pay any more taxes. Oh, wonderful day. And so, the promise of the girl has already been given. And so evidently, Saul has forgot about it, made like he didn't remember it, and now he is reoffering what has already been previously offered. And what does David say? Well, who am I? In other words, I'm a nobody. I've just been a shepherd and a harp player. And what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be the son-in-law of the king? In other words, David is still a humble man. No doubt by this time, you know, the fact that he has been placed over some army soldiers and now he is coming in and out and going in and he's behaving himself skillfully or wisely. He's probably 20 years old by now. And so he's just still humble as he can be. And he says, I mean, I don't belong in the king's family. I mean, I'm just a shepherd guy. My daddy's really not anybody important either. My brothers aren't important. I mean, they're just enlisted guys in your army. And verse 19 says, but it came to pass at the time. Well, what does that little phrase mean? Evidently, there had been a time that had been set that if David was going to be valiant or strong for Saul and get this girl, Mirah, there was an expiration point on it. And so maybe it took longer than David was anticipating. And so Mirah, Saul's daughter, she should have been given to David. Remember 17:25? I mean, he'd already killed the giant. So rightfully, she was his. So now, when it's reoffered, he goes out, he's being strong, but he doesn't get back in time. And so she is given to Adriel, the Meholathite. And I think that's the way that's pronounced. I'm going to probably pull a Gypsy Smith the next time I say that. Gypsy Smith was an old-time evangelist. And if he was preaching on a passage of Scripture and it had big, hard words in it, what he would do is he would read up to that point and then he'd stop and he'd look at the congregation to make a few comments. Then he'd say, well, let's get back to the passage. And then he would start on the other side of that word. And so Meholathite is probably going to only be mentioned that one time now that I just mentioned it. From now on, it's going to be she was given to Adriel. All right? And what was she given to him about? To be his wife. I think that this is Saul's attempt to basically provoke David. You remember the phrase? David acted wisely. He was skillful in the way that he answered. He was skillful in the way that he conducted himself. But I think that Saul probably in his mind remembered the promise about Goliath. And then he added something to it. And then David, who had already been promised it one chapter earlier, and now he's a little bit late getting back from the time that has now expired. And he goes, sorry, buddy, you're late. Mirah goes to Adriel. And so he tries to provoke him. But David, he's still a wise young man. He's still skillful in the way that he answers. Have you ever known people that were just able to answer things the right way? And then you've got other people that it does not matter what they say, it just comes out wrong. I mean, you can say something, some people can, and it'd be like, you know, selling ice cubes to an Eskimo. I mean, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, okay, I'm in favor of that. And then other people, I mean, they cannot communicate whatsoever. David was like the first. It seems that whatever David did, God gave him the words to say, the ways to act, and he had great discernment. There's no doubt, I don't think in my mind, that David knew exactly what Saul was trying to do. He was trying to provoke him and get his name to begin to be ratcheted down a little bit. Because you see, the song was still on the top 40. Saul has slain his thousands, but David is 10,000s. I mean, everybody remembered that oldie but goodie. All right? And so what we've got to do is we've got to just simply look at David and say, that's how we need to behave. We need to be wise. We need to be skillful in the way that we do things. And sometimes you can say things and you mean it in a very innocent way, and it may come out wrong. But it seems as though that God had set a guard over David's mouth in the way that he responded. Well, when we come to verse number 20, we are introduced not to the oldest girl, but to the youngest girl. And this is where the sermon title, David's Dowry, comes in. In verse 20, the Bible says, Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. This young girl started out great. But may I remind you that in the early part of this book, Saul started out great. And I can't help but think that sometime the old apple don't fall far from the tree. And here she is, she's a young girl. And let's face it, what young girl in Israel would not want to marry David? You know? I mean, he's ruggedly handsome. I mean, he can protect you when nobody else can. He can sing love songs to you. He can quote poetry. I mean, he's got the whole package. And no doubt when he rode through on his horse or walked through at the front of his 1,000 men, those young girls would go, if he would only ask me. And I guarantee you that they loved him, and he could have had his pick of all the young ladies in that country. Michal had seen this from a distance. She knew all about the customs. The oldest was going to marry first. Well, Mira got married. And she thought, but she didn't marry him. And so, it says that she loved David. Is that not something that's beautiful to start off a marriage with? But I want you to know something, that just because she loves David at the beginning, she doesn't love him at the end. If we were to take her life, and we're going to get to parts of it, we will not get to all of it unless God directs me to go through 2 Samuel. But when you look at her life, you'll find that she loves David. Then she gives David deliverance from those messengers that are trying to kill him while he's asleep or while he's feigned sickness. Then she forsakes David by marrying someone else. You see, David's on the run. And she's thinking, I'm a young lady. Hey, he's got to be dead. But David wasn't dead. And so, she becomes the wife of another guy. But then later on, Saul dies. And things in Israel begin to change. And when those things change, you know what happens. David moves to the kingship. Well, what does he do? He goes and he says, Michal, you belong to me. I wasn't dead. He's not your rightful husband, I am. You don't find her weeping anywhere over that. Now, that's a hard story. And he's the king, and he can make her do really anything he wants. But you don't find her really resisting a whole lot. You find the man that she's been living with as a husband, you find him resisting. You find him following along, crying, saying, let me have her back. And finally, David's general, Joab, looks at him and he says, turn around and go home or we're going to kill you. The guy turns around and he starts walking back home basically with his head tucked. Why? Because he's going to lose his life. You don't find her going, David, please let me stay. No, she's thinking, hey, I'm the first wife. I'm going to be number one in that palace. You know, hey, he may not have me doing everything, but I'll be the first in authority among the wives. And by the way, this is the first marriage, but there will be several for David, which gives many of us in the ministry pause, because in the original beginning of mankind, it was one man and one woman. I've been telling people I'm going to share this, and I might as well just do it now. And it's a little poem that goes like this. It says, King David and King Solomon live merry, merry lives with many, many lady friends and many, many wives. Oh, but when they were old with its many, many qualms, King Solomon wrote the Proverbs and King David wrote the Psalms. So just because you are young and you think you can do whatever you want to, there's coming a time, as old R.G. Lee would say, it's payday someday. And so you've got Michal, and she ultimately gets to the point when David unifies the kingdoms. I mean, he takes all of them from way up in the north to way down in the south in Beersheba. I mean, that's where the title comes, or the saying comes from, Dan to Beersheba. I mean, the length and the breadth of the nation of Israel. All of that is unified for the first time, really, under David. He gets it all. And those people fall in the line, and what does he do? He moves the capital to Jerusalem. They get the Ark of the Covenant, and every few feet, what's he doing? He's jumping up and down. He's taking his kingly robe off, and in her mind, she is embarrassed. And she's looking out the window, and she's seeing the king act this way. And basically, when he gets home, she reads him the Riot Act. And because of that, he gets ticked off, and the scriptures tell us that in all the days of her life, she never had a child. That's a very easy, kind, beautiful way of saying David never had relations with her after that. He said, you going to run your mouth at me that way? Don't expect me to come by and take you out to dinner. That's basically what it is, all right? And so she lived a really sad life. The only joy that she had, her sister Mara, that got married earlier, had five boys. Mara died an early death, prematurely, and she raised those boys. And that was about the only joy that this gal had. Oh, but it started off so beautiful. I mean, it was just a beautiful thing, the way that she loved him and the way that she protects him in the next couple of chapters. But then it starts to go, which is a warning. People can start off in their marriage and they can love each other dearly. I mean, they can just love just being in each other's presence. But if you don't nurture that, and if you don't keep that work going to try to make that thing beautiful, it won't be long before you can't stand to look at each other. And we've had counseling sessions with numerous people where things have been said just exactly like that. I don't care if I ever lay eyes on her again. I don't care where he goes. As far as I'm concerned, he's dead to me. That kind of stuff. And bitterness can get in the heart of everybody that don't guard their heart. Well, she loves him. But old Saul, he says, I know what I'll do. I'll lay a trap for him. And so he begins to devise a plan. And so, if you look with me in verse 21, what's the plan? I will give her him that she may be a snare to him, that the hand of the Philistines might be upon him. And so what is the plan? Well, they want to go to David in verse 22 and 23, and the servants of Saul, they want to just kind of come along and say, you know, I know you don't have any money, but if you'll just do this heroic deed, Saul, he'll really help you. I mean, he'll accept you into his family. And so, you know, David, he's like, you know, I mean, does it seem like a light thing to be a part of the king's family to you? And they're like, no, but, you know, but Saul, he wants you to be in his family. I mean, he loves the way that you beat Goliath, and he loves the way you're winning these battles. You know, it doesn't bother him that, you know, these folks are, you know, are singing about his 10,000 and Saul's 1,000. And I mean, they're just basically just building him up and lying to him with compliments. Be careful when people begin to brag on you and tell you how wonderful you are. Take it all with a grain of salt. Flattery can be deceitful. And you've got to be very, very careful about that. And so the servants of Saul are helping to institute this plan. Well, somehow they get David to come to see Saul. And again, I think he's on, you know, on his tiptoes here in case he's got to dodge a javelin. The king desireth not any dowry, Saul says, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to be avenged of the king's enemies. Now, the Philistines have been being whipped every time they stick their head up somewhere, and it all started when David beat Goliath. But these skirmishes are coming. There's raiding parties that are here. And so he's thinking, well, for him to marry my youngest girl, I know what I'll do is I'll make him get the foreskin of 100 Philistines. Now, what's his plan? The latter part of verse 25 says, but Saul thought to make David fall. So therefore, God reveals the heart of Saul. He wants him to get killed by the hand of the Philistines. But I want you to notice David. Now again, this is a man that is behaving himself wisely. He's behaving himself very skillfully in everything that he does. I mean, whether it's a battle plan or whether it's having to speak to a group or having to talk to Saul, ever how he had to do it, he just seemed to pull the right lever. Well, when the servants told David those words, that the king didn't really desire any dowry, you know, I mean, David's hearing Saul say this. It pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law. So he's like, okay, all right. Well, the next phrase says this, and the days were not expired. Now, look back at verse 19. And it came to pass at the time. The first girl, the time expired. The time that he was supposed to have to basically go out and be valiant, that expired. But in verse 26, the dowry requirement was 100 Philistines, foreskin. Now the question was this, why that? Why not just their heads? I mean, after all, I mean, that's what the Assyrians did. They cut heads off and made stacks out of them. Other people would take heads, and why is it that Saul would say that? Well, it probably goes back to the fact that Israel is a covenant nation. Do you remember what David said to Goliath whenever they were posturing before he actually killed him? He was asking the men in the camp, who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God. And as they begin to posture, David is looking at him and he says, man, you're nothing. He said, you're a heathen. And the covenant in Israel started way back with Abraham. And what was that? The males had to be circumcised. The Philistines, they didn't practice circumcision. And so this was Saul's way to identify the enemy. If he would have said, bring me the heads, he's thinking, David might kill some of my men, rough them up a little bit, throw heads in a bag, and I may not be able to recognize them, but it'd be my guys. But if he does the dowry that Saul asked for, there's no question about the fact that it's Philistines because they were uncircumcised. And so David, he's thinking, it's no big deal. Verse 27 says, by the way, the time had not expired and he was able to do this. David arose and went, he and his men, and slew of the Philistines 200 men. You're talking about going a second mile. David is thinking, you know, if Saul wants 100, I'll give him 2. So he takes his men and they go out and they find 200 Philistines. They bring the evidence and they give it full tale, which means a full count. And there's 200 there instead of 100. Well, Saul's put on the spot. He can't back out now. I mean, after all, he's already opened his mouth one time over on the hillside at the Valley of Elah. And he backed off on that, and then he offered Mara again. Well, this is the third time. If he does it again, people are going to go, Saul lies. And so he's saving face, and he just says, okay. So Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. Verse 28, 29, and 30 closes this chapter. And here's our phrase again. Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David. He had to be with him. I mean, him and his men, they go out and they get into a tussle and they kill 200 guys. David may not have 200 men. But then again, when God's with you, you don't have to have everybody. Do you remember the story of Jonathan and his servant when they were going up that slick hill, had rocky crags on each side? And they said, if they say come up, we'll go up, we'll fight them. If they say we'll come down, we'll know that's not God's will and we'll leave. Well, they said, come on up. And God was with Jonathan and his servant, and Jonathan was knocking them out, and the servant was killing them with the one sword they had. When God's on your side, it's a majority. And so, Saul was yet more afraid of David. And he became David's enemy continually. And verse 30 closes out almost with just kind of a, I don't know, just a throwaway verse. It says, then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass after they went forth. That little phrase basically means that these Philistine princes went out to war against Israel. Now, why would they do that? National pride. All right? I mean, there comes a time when you've got to just try to stand up for your side. Their champions already died, which may be a couple of 3-4 years ago by now. David keeps going out, killing Philistine group after Philistine group. He goes back in and his popularity just keeps rising. And all of a sudden now they're down to some of these princes of the Philistines. And so they go, well, he just killed 200 more of us. And not only that, they mutilated their bodies and paraded that before their king. And so these princes of Philistia, they went out, and it came to pass after they went forth that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul. I've been saying this throughout the message tonight. David behaved himself wisely. He behaved himself skillfully. So in other words, when these princes came out, he was skillful in the way that he dealt with them. And he killed them just like he had killed the 200 and just like he had killed the others with his 1,000 group, just like he killed Goliath. He was skillful. He was wise in the way that he went about things. And so he acted with skill as opposed to the opposite, which is what Saul does. He acts the fool. Every time you see Saul act, it's as though God is saying, I'm going to make a fool out of you. And that's what takes place in the life of Saul. Well, what is the result? The last little phrase in this chapter says, so that his name was much set by. That simply means that his name was esteemed. In other words, it was lifted up even more. Every time David does something, his reputation grows. It's no wonder that after Saul dies, that David unifies that country. You may have some strong men somewhere up in the north, or you may have some strong men somewhere way down in the south, but when they hear about David, they go, we'll follow him. Because if we don't, he'll treat us like the Philistines. Well, I can't help think of all the killing that David has been doing from the time that he was about 16. And all the battles that he's going to fight. It's no wonder that God says, you cannot build my temple because you're a bloody man. He's been killing people by the thousands. And so God will not let the man after his own heart do something that he wants to do for God. But God will let him collect the materials for it. And may I say that there's not a character in the whole history of Israel that is more loved than David. Today, in 2018, there is nobody that's more loved than David. David is loved as much or more than even Abraham, the father of the nation. He's loved more than Moses, the lawgiver. David is the king that everybody else is measured by. He was a bloody man, but he was a man that God was with. Let's stand together. Thank you for being here tonight.